And we're joined by Mike Din, all the way from Canberra. Welcome, Mike, to the Space Show and the Space Association. I understand there's an important anniversary happening this month. Would you like to tell us a bit about that and your part in it?
Yes, well, thank you, Peter. We're just coming up to the 50th anniversary of the landing of Surveyor 1, NASA's, America's first soft landing on the moon, June the 2nd. It's very memorable for me because it was the first space mission of significance that I was associated with. I started at Tidbin Biller in February 1966, after having worked 5 years at Laverton on aircraft flight testing. Turned up in Canberra on Decimal Currency Day, 14th of February 1966, and Surveyor 1 was my first mission. The picture, which I happen to have now, but is of the Surveyor spacecraft. It's a three-legged device with two Omni antennas, a high-gain antenna, a solar panel, television camera, built by Hughes Aircraft in Los Angeles. It took quite a few years to get itself to that stage. There were quite a few missed starts and a few failures. But anyway, Surveyor 1 launched at the end of May 1966.
It looks like it's on the beach there, Mike.
It does. Missed
landing or what?
I think this particular photograph was probably taken at White Sands, New Mexico. They did a number of drop tests to check out the landing radar and the retro engine and the verniers, obviously doing it in 1G gravity. So that had been checked out to the extent you can in a 1G environment. So the role of the tracking station here in Canberra was at what's called Tidbin Biller, the Tidbin Biller Deep Space Station, also known as the Deep Space Instrumentation Facility in those days. We were one of the three stations around the world that tracked Surveyor. The other deep space station in Australia at that time was at Woomera, or near Woomera, Deep Space Station 41. It, however, was working with Lunar Orbiter, which was in many ways equally important to Surveyor. That was taking detailed in-orbit pictures for the mission. There was a precursor to this soft landing, and that was Ranger, which was a lunar impact mission. Again, this was one of the first that JPL, the Americans, NASA, ran. It started in about 1961. They had many failures. In fact, their very first attempt didn't even hit the moon at all. It missed it entirely. But eventually, they had some very good results, ending up with pictures that were down to about a 20-centimeter resolution. And in the end, as I say, after an awful lot of problems, everybody was reasonably happy with that. The Ranger spacecraft had solar panels only; it didn't have any other power source, but it worked quite well, and it used what was called the L-band tracking system in those days.
And that just orbited the moon, yeah?
No, it was a hard. It just hit it.
Oh, it
bang!
Yeah. Oh,
crash.
Okay.
The lunar orbiter, which came later, and it came in along in parallel with Surveyor, did the orbiting. Although the Americans were Surveyor was the first American mission to land, they'd been beaten by the Russians, which I'm sure was to the chagrin of a great deal of my colleagues in NASA. Lunar 9 landed in January 66, and it operated for about 7 hours, and it did show some pictures of the lunar surface. So certainly the Russians were first, although the Surveyor certainly became a far longer-term mission. And I'm not aware of any other Russian landings other than that Lunar 9. There might have been, but I'm not aware of them. Moving on to what the objectives of Surveyor was, it had three primary objectives. They had hoped to do a lot of science on the spacecraft, but it came down basically to an engineering and a demonstration mission, demonstrate that the Atlas Centaur rocket combination could work okay, and that was going to be quite an achievement because there hadn't really been a successful all-up Centaur launch, certainly not a reignite of the Centaur in Earth orbit. And the next major objective was to show that they could do mid-course and terminal maneuvers and actually land on the moon. And the third priority was to show that the deep space network could provide satisfactory communications with the spacecraft. but none in particular. There is not a fourth. There is no primary objective to take photographs or take images of the moon. Yeah. So that was looked on as a, well, maybe we might. No one expected it to be successful because it had all these problems. Hence, they kept it to these three primary objectives. So Surveyor was launched on this Atlas Centaur combination in the end of May 66 from the Cape. The structure of the rocket was, as I have a picture that shows the Centaur being the second stage. The Centaur was of great interest in that it was liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen fuel, which is pretty fiendish to think about, putting into a tank and throwing up into orbit. And it took a long while to become reliable. However, it became a workhorse of the NASA launch system and is still in use today in a derivative. So although it started off with a lot of problems, it came out as a very productive rocket.
So that Centaur was used to get into Earth orbit and then reignited to get the spacecraft to the moon?
Well, yes and no. That was the intent. That was the original intent. A little bit like Apollo, where you go into lunar orbit and then you do a second burn to go on trajectory. Because Atlas Centaur 8, AC-8, was meant to demonstrate that but failed, they decided to have a direct launch or a direct trajectory without a parking orbit. So there is a picture of the trajectory from the Earth to the Moon, which involved that direct launch, and then the spacecraft got its orientation by pointing at the Sun on one axis and Canopus star on the other axis. They did a thing called a mid-course correction to ensure it hit the Moon and arrived at the desired target, and it took about 60 odd hours to get to the Moon. And when it got to within 60 miles of the Moon, then it initiated its landing sequence. So the landing sequence involved the ignition of a retro rocket and the spacecraft stabilized by three what they call vernier engines.
And we're back with Mike Dean. We've just witnessed Surveyor 1 landing on the Moon, and now the spacecraft on the Moon. Pick us back up there, Mike.
Well, here it is. So this is actually Surveyor 3 on the Moon, the one that the Apollo 12 astronauts went and visited, but it shows the major components, the Omni antennas, the high-gain antenna, the solar panel, TV camera, the vernier engines, and the three landing pads, except that Surveyor 3 had a surface sampler scoop digger on it. And then shortly after landing, we started taking pictures. We got a number of Polaroids. All the pictures came down, relatively slow scan. They were recorded on 70mm film. They were also recorded on magnetic tape. And for quick look purposes, we had polarized pictures. We had three tracking stations, as I said, the Canberra one, Madrid, and also Johannesburg, South Africa were involved, and Goldstone. Once you're outside about 10,000 or 13,000 kilometres, those stations can see deep space, including the Moon, continuously. We had this network of Goldstone Lake in California, Tidbinbilla, and Johannesburg with Madrid. As I said earlier, the Woomera station was busy tracking lunar orbiter and dedicated lunar orbiter during this period. There are three tracking stations around Canberra in this era. Tidbinbilla, which is still here, by the by. The Apollo station, about 30 kilometres south. And the Auroral Valley tracking station, which handled Earth orbiting spacecraft. The latter two sites are still visitable, but it's just the foundations now. But Tidbinbilla is very big and very active still. It comprised one antenna, one operations building, one powerhouse, and one sleeping canteen area. It was modified when Apollo came along, added another wing for the Apollo electronics. And if you look at it on Google Earth now, you'll see about six or eight antennas, but this is as it was in the 60s. It comprised a transmitting system, a receiving system, and and navigation system, navigation being where you extract the speed and the range to the spacecraft. That was done with great precision, using, dependent on a very accurate timing system, frequency system, best in the southern hemisphere it was at that point in time. The equipment in that era was analog and involved a lot of people operating a lot of equipment. And by operating, I mean pushing buttons and putting jacks in the right hole, switches, knobs, meters, oscilloscopes. The modern electronic engineer person would hardly know much about any of this, because it's all done in general today by one person. So the picture I happen to have here is about 20 people who would have all been on shift during all these Apollo missions. My boss, Bob Leslie, the station director, was in charge in this era.